Good morning, friends. There's a famous 19th century poem by John Keats, the English romantic, called Ode on a Grecian Urn. The poet gazes on the urn and rhapsodizes about its beauty, ponders scenes of village life that are painted on the sides, and he concludes with these words: "Beauty is truth, truth beauty. That is all ye know on earth and all ye need to know." Keats was invoking an idea that goes back to the ancient Greeks, the idea that truth and beauty are inseparable. I'm kind of skeptical. Or maybe it's that I'm not actually much interested in truth and beauty as abstract concepts. You know, truth with a capital T, as if there's just one, or beauty with a capital B, as if it had any existence outside our perceptions of the world. What I'm interested in is the messy reality of multiple contradictory truths, small t truths that all coexist without canceling each other out. What I'm interested in, and what Unitarian Universalism calls me to explore with eyes and mind as open as possible, is this world we actually live in, where beautiful truths and heartbreaking truths and horrifying truths coexist, where beauty and ugliness and brokenness, joy and suffering aren't competing for position as ultimate truth, and don't even need a single unifying explanation. This is why I love the words of the South African novelist Nadine Gordimer, which I discovered in my 20s and have been a beacon for me ever since. Gordimer wrote, "The truth isn't always beauty, but the hunger for it is." Those words still have the power to stop me in my tracks, and I've taken them as inspiration for my remarks to you this morning. The truth isn't always beauty, but the hunger for it is. Sorry, Keats. Sometimes truth hurts. There are hard truths, we know, and bitter truths. There are truths so far from beauty that we avert our eyes. The truth of what happens behind closed doors. The truth of what I really feel or don't feel. The truth of what he did to her. The truth of what we have done to each other. Truths of genocide, of slavery and lynching. The truth of landmines and what atomic bombs do to bodies and chemical weapons. The truth of hunger and what it is in the belly. The truth about conditions in refugee camps and detention centers. The truth about habitat destruction and species loss. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It is not always pretty. It can feel unbearable. So, often we try to bury or deny or ignore the painful truths, or maybe to cover them up with a facade that hides the ugliness. Sometimes we decorate our facades and try to make them look pretty. How's that worked out for you? In my experience, painful truths that get buried always find a way out, and usually after they have done a lot of damage. Like an internal infection, a buried truth poisons and damages and festers. Individual traumas buried can destroy physical and mental health. Social traumas unacknowledged can destroy democracy. The truth isn't always beauty, but the hunger for it is. Nadine Gordimer, who wrote those words, was a white Jewish South African writer and an outspoken opponent of apartheid. She won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1991. Her lines about truth and beauty come from a personal essay about her childhood, but they also speak to the larger social context within which she lived and wrote. Gordimer relentlessly explored the complicity of white South Africans like herself, who benefited from white supremacy, and she was committed to telling uncomfortable truths about privilege and about the violence against black bodies that made that privilege possible. After the collapse of apartheid, you may remember, when the black majority in South Africa ruled their own country for the first time, there was a great and deep need for truth-telling. The majority understood that a new just society could not be created in the aftermath of oppression and generational trauma without excavation and public airing of even the most painful truths of the past. And rather than seeking revenge, which would have made national unity impossible, the government decided to seek reconciliation, but only after and on the basis of radical truth-telling. The South African truth and reconciliation process, which was led by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, became a model for other nations around the globe seeking restorative justice in the aftermath of genocide and crimes against humanity. In hearings across the country, people confronted the perpetrators of violence with the truth of their suffering and the truth of their humanity. And perpetrators, black and white on all sides of the conflict, who publicly told the truth about abuses they had committed, were granted amnesty. As painful as the process was, the hunger for truth created the conditions for a new beginning. I have often thought, and I'm not alone in the thought, that the United States needs a truth and reconciliation process to grapple head-on with our national legacy of genocide against indigenous peoples, slavery, lynching, and other forms of violence that have formed the historical foundation for contemporary injustices. And I'm heartened by the efforts of so many Americans, like Brian Stevenson, who spoke at our UU General Assembly 2 years ago, and his colleagues at the Equal Justice Institute, who have founded a legacy museum in Montgomery, Alabama, and a community remembrance project to commemorate victims of lynching, victims of many races across the country. Hiding from these terrible historical truths, hiding of any kind, whether it's Holocaust denial, climate change denial, refusal to hear the voices of the Me Too movement, that only perpetuates damage. It's the same thing on a societal level that we see in families who look good on the outside while terrible suffering is being experienced on the inside. The refusal to name brokenness, to acknowledge the need for healing, keeps things broken. Pretending that things are okay or trying to make them look good prevents healing. The truth isn't always beauty, but the hunger for it is. Sometimes I think people are just afraid that telling painful or ugly truths will make things worse. Sometimes people think that acknowledging a painful or ugly truth will negate what else in the world is good and beautiful. But it doesn't work that way. Acknowledging, for example, everything that is wrong in our country doesn't mean that nothing is right. Acknowledging what is broken in our hearts doesn't mean that we are not good. And acknowledging what is broken in families, communities, and churches doesn't mean there is not also great love and great beauty. Beauty and brokenness can and do coexist all the time. It's the essence of the human condition. Which reminds me of this great song from South Africa from around the same time that Nadine Gordimer was at the height of her writing powers. It's a song by a group called Savuka, a multiracial band founded in 1986, and their name, Savuka, is the Zulu word for "we have risen." They blended traditional Zulu music with rock, and the songs often addressed political themes. The very existence of this band was political, because in 1986, it was illegal for black and white musicians to perform together on the same stage, and it was illegal to perform before mixed-race audiences. one of my favorite albums by this band, which was like on permanent repeat in my car for many years, is called Cruel, Crazy, Beautiful World. And the title track is a song written from the perspective of a parent speaking to his child, wishing clear blue skies for that child and also knowing that the world is already delivering both great joy and beauty and great suffering, which do not cancel each other out. The refrain goes, "It's a cruel, crazy, beautiful world. Every day you wake up, I hope it's a blue, blue sky. It's a cruel, crazy, beautiful world. One day when you wake up, I will have to say goodbye." And the song ends with a refrain that's repeated over and over to a growing beat. After acknowledging all the cruelty and craziness and beauty that coexists, the father sings to his son, "It's your world, so live in it. It's your world, so live in it." So the band was singing to black South Africans and to interracial anti-apartheid coalition audiences, "It's your world, so live in it." And to really live in the world, as the song suggests, we have to live in all of it. We have to live in the cruelty and the craziness without burying our heads in the sand, because then we won't be able to see the beauty, feel the joy, dance and sing along. It's your world, so live in it, all of it. We can look around at our kindred across the globe and see that people find beauty, make beauty, celebrate beauty, even in the midst of the worst brokenness and horror. People plant flowers and paint murals in favelas. People sing and dance in refugee camps and in exile. Isn't that amazing? The human impulse to create beauty, even under conditions of oppression and poverty and violence, can be crushed by circumstance in the short term, but it always comes back. Maybe that's because beauty gives us strength to confront the truths that are not beautiful. And maybe it's because beauty itself, whether it's the curve of a branch against the sky, or the curve of a ceramic urn, or the curve of a loved one's cheek, reminds us of other truths like interdependence, like the indomitability of spirit, which are not negated by human brokenness. Erica Hewitt suggested in the reading that we heard earlier that brokenness and wholeness may be opposites, but they are not mutually exclusive. Our inherent wholeness is a fundamental truth not negated by the experience of brokenness. And what's more, we don't need to think of brokenness as ugly. I recently read an article about learning from our regrets. The author, Jennifer Tates, is a clinical instructor in psychiatry at UCLA, and she used a wonderful metaphor. She wrote this: "There's a Japanese art called kintsugi. Literally translated, it means golden repair. Kintsugi is a philosophy of repairing broken things, like cracks in pottery, for example. Rather than hide an item's imperfections, the reparations process highlights them. Those imperfections are considered part of the item's history, and repairing it this way can add beauty to the original items, like using precious metal to fill cracks in pottery." Did you get that? Rather than hiding brokenness, the reparation process deliberately highlights it, and that adds beauty rather than distracting from it. If you're not familiar with kintsugi as a ceramic art, you can find lots of images online, like I did, and I chose this image with the chalice very deliberately. I'll get to that in a moment. But first, just ask yourself, what might it mean to you if repairing what is broken, creating beauty where there has been ugliness, does not require covering anything up or making it seem like new? What if we embraced the beauty of the piecing back together, the beauty of creating something new out of the wreckage of the old, in a way that celebrates and highlights, instead of hiding, our process of transformation? reading about kintsugi, and I hope this isn't too much of a tangent, but I had to share it, made me think of a different sort of art that highlights what traditionally has been hidden away or prettified. Decades ago, I was blown away by a black and white photographic image in a feminist poster that seemed very radical at the time. It was a topless woman with her arms flung out and her head tossed back in laughter or triumph, and a botanical tattoo unfurling all across her chest where her breasts used to be, highlighting rather than hiding her mastectomy scars. I had never seen anything like it. I had not imagined such an image could exist. And when I went online to see if I could find the image, I couldn't, because the internet in 2019 is so full of beautiful photographs of people who have adorned scars and amputations and physical difference with tattoo and other forms of body art. It's like body kintsugi, adding beauty, claiming this is whole as it is, without trying to make something look like society says it should, or like maybe it did before. So, back to our kintsugi chalice. I've talked about the difficulty that societies and individuals have in telling and facing painful truth, especially truths about our own brokenness and the ways we have damaged each other. It's also true for religious communities. It's true for Unitarian Universalism. Just by way of example, white Unitarian Universalists, like me, find it easy to proudly claim that part of our Unitarian and Universalist heritage that's full of abolitionists and civil rights heroes. And that is a beautiful part of our tradition that we are right to celebrate. The problem is that while we're celebrating that, we are often content to remain ignorant of other parts of our Unitarian and Universalist history, such as churches that were built with slave labor, Unitarian missions to civilize indigenous peoples, like the Ute of Colorado, the betrayal by the UUA and the General Assembly, which means us, the congregations, of black clergy and black members in the 1960s and 70s, and our very recent crises about racial equity and white supremacy in UUA staff hiring and power structures. The experiences of people of color in our movement are truths that white UUs, like me, too often turn away from or want to leapfrog over really fast on the way to a kumbaya moment. And here's another example. I think it is easy for Unitarian Universalists to feel good about our denomination's long history of support for gay and lesbian rights and the fact that UU ministers have been blessing same-sex unions for decades before anyone else even heard of marriage equality. And it is wonderful that we celebrate that history. It is a beautiful history. But while we are waving that beautiful rainbow flag, we often fail to see the pain that we keep causing our transgender and non-binary, meaning neither male nor female, and gender non-conforming kindred with ignorant assumptions, microaggressions, and sometimes flat-out bigotry. To learn about a very recent example of this, I encourage you to visit the website of our denominational magazine, the UUA World. The landing page right now is a whole exploration of a recent well-intended but hurtful article that was published in the UU World. And if you have questions on matters related to that, I'm available to chat at some future date. But I thought of these things as I looked at the kintsugi chalice. When we fail to live up to our values as a religious community, we're demonstrating our brokenness. I say that not to shame us, but just to say brokenness is part of the human condition and we have to acknowledge where we have failed and caused each other harm. Brokenness can be an opportunity for healing if we make it so. And I was thinking about this part of UU history when I discovered this image, and I thought, what a great way to convey that we don't need to hide our brokenness as Unitarian Universalists and our past mistakes in order to repair our beloved community and celebrate its beauty. Now, unsurprisingly, I turn out not to be the first person to have thought of this. Lots of people had this idea before me, in fact. Specifically, Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism, an organization of African American clergy and lay leaders within our denomination. They have created a whole set of wonderful worship materials to address racial wounds within our congregations and our movement. And guess what their proposed children's activity is? A kintsugi chalice. You can learn more about Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism, as well as other people of color organizations in our movement, and our UU history of internal racial conflict and brokenness and restorative justice at UUA.org. Kintsugi also speaks to me on a personal level. As someone who has had to rebuild internal integrity after brokenness in my personal life, and heal wounds caused by things I'd rather not look at. I bet that makes me a lot like most of you. Brokenness, again, is part of the human condition, and so is the ability to heal. What makes real healing possible for the individual, as for the congregation and the society, is the hunger for truth. When my need for liberation from my own suffering finally outweighs the deadly grip of denial, and I find myself not only willing but eager to unearth the truth of my real feelings and my actual experiences, even in their ugliness, then healing can happen. Then I can manifest my inherent wholeness in a way that doesn't hide imperfection, but celebrates the beauty of the repair work. Nadine Gordimer said, "The truth isn't always beauty, but the hunger for it is." So friends, let's hunger for the light of truth. Let us yearn for that light so that we can see what's real and confront it honestly. Where the truth is beautiful, let's celebrate it together. Where the truth is painful, let's admit it. And may we make our reparations in ways that don't obscure the hard truths of history, but that proclaim the beauty of our commitment to healing what has been broken. So may it be.